destroying the media lies, and dismantling the narratives, one story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show Quick Rant. Follow on Twitter, twitter.com/rantsoutloud. Read the blog at adriansladeshow.com, and get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel in the streaming store.
Look, little Miss Dreamer need not worry her pretty little head. You know, the dreamer that we heard crying at the top of the program, she shouldn't worry. Her and her cousin, they're going to be fine. I mean, I don't think anything is going to come to fruition. Look, I've focused my show content on our real enemy, the left, and it's why I've been focusing on uncovering the true agents of Antifa and Black Lives Matter the last couple weeks. It's why I spent time illustrating the case for capitalism a few weeks earlier than that. And to make the arguments for the tenets of what conservatarians like myself believe. But what our president is currently doing cannot go unnoticed. And I'm sorry, I have plenty of friends and family members who are fixated with the personality of Trump. They're not going to like this part of the program. You may want to turn it off. But before you think that I'm some never-Trumper, some, you know, anti-Trump guy who's going to just knock him every chance I get, keep in mind, I've given him praise when he deserves it. And I will criticize him when he deserves that too. You know, if while everybody was enjoying the Super Bowl, I actually did a show when I saw a news story float by at the same time that no one noticed. And that is Donald Trump's FCC chairman, FCC commissioner, his pick. That guy's awesome. And he's fighting tooth and nail against net neutrality. And we should show that to everybody. I mean, the same thing with the show I did a few months back, uncovering Donald Trump's tax proposal. See, I actually have a license that's issued by the IRS for learning the tax code inside and out and taking exams on it. So I have a level of insight that a lot of people don't have. And when I went through his tax proposal, I picked out the things that I thought would have been great things to reform the tax code with. Whether or not we get that, that's a whole nother thing. But I'm not going to just praise this guy just because I'm following a person. You know, many of us who are, we're seeing this shift that Donald Trump is doing, it's not shocking to us. We weren't dazzled by this so-called outsider businessman, world's best negotiator, you know, that mythos. We're seeing him shift back to the things in the past that made us nervous to begin with. And those were the things that made, you know, we were labeled cucks and we're labeled weak for not following a man, a person. Because we weren't following an individual. We weren't following a flawed human being. We were following the principles that were made clear in the Declaration of Independence, which then are expanded and laid into great detail in the Constitution. And after 8 years of that being beaten, that being ignored, we just wanted someone who had this understanding of those principles ingrained within their being. And we wanted that person to carry the torch of those principles in a march towards constitutional restoration. Instead, we had someone who was this progressive New York-style individual with the values of progressive New Yorkism, I guess is how you would say it. And he saw an opening in the Republican Party, and he took it. He knows he could never run as a Democrat. They wouldn't let him in the club. I mean, with the Democrat Party, there's a lineage. And it's your turn. And wait a minute, it's your turn. And now their bench doesn't look all that hot right now. That turn, that grouping of people, that goes... I mean, think of the superdelegates. You know, they have a lockdown on that entire process. And it does exist in the GOP too. But there was such a willingness for the GOP to simply win that he saw the crack. He took it. But even on the Republican side of the aisle, he just wants to be in the club as well. And that's why we're seeing these shifts. I mean, so you tell me, what is it that the president... What caused the president to decide to shift positions from what he had during the primaries? You know, he sounds now like a lot like Jeb Bush. Essentially, we had President Jeb Kasich making deals with Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the like. And it's not as though Ted Cruz didn't warn us that this was going to happen.
Bob Dole explained why the establishment is supporting Donald Trump. They said he's someone we can make a deal with. He's someone we can cut a deal with. And I would note, Donald, just a couple of days ago, drew the difference between me and him. And he said, look, Ted won't go along to get along. He won't cut a deal. So If as a voter you think what we need is more Republicans in Washington to cut a deal with Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, then I guess Donald Trump's your guy.
See, I understand where DACA was done in an unconstitutional fashion by Obama's pen and phone. So I could slightly rationalize what Donald Trump was doing by saying, hey, it's an executive order. This wasn't the way it's supposed to be done. Let's undo it and let's have Congress fix this now the way it's supposed to be. But the problem here is urging and even demanding that Congress even act upon this idea. I mean, no one who despises the idea of some sort of amnesty workaround actually wants Congress to do anything about it. We know Congress can't even undo the 8 different tries of Obamacare repeal that we voted them into the majority in order to finally complete. But Trump was elected because he beat the ever-living tar out of 12 other candidates in framing all of them as being for amnesty while hijacking the anti-illegal immigration policy. I mean, listen to him back during the primaries. I'm not trying to relive and litigate the GOP primaries all over again, but we need to go back to history to refresh ourselves. Listen how hardcore his stance was.
But the motivation, they're not all rapists, as you know who said. They're not that. These are people that are coming to provide for their families. And we should show a little more respect for the fact that they're struggling. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be controlling the border. That's exactly what we should be doing.
Mr. Trump, look. When I announced that I was running for president on June 16th, illegal immigration wasn't even a subject. If I didn't bring it up, you wouldn't even be talking. Now, I don't often agree with Marco, and I don't often agree with Ted, but I can in this case. The weakest person on the stage by far on illegal immigration is Jeb Bush. They come out of an act of love, whether you like it or not. He is so weak on illegal immigration, it's laughable, and everybody knows it.
Mr. Trump, you've called for a deportation force to remove the 11 million undocumented immigrants from the United States. You've also promised to let what you call the good ones come back in, your words, the good ones, after they've been deported. Senator Cruz would not allow them to come back in. He says that's the biggest difference between the two of you. He calls your plan amnesty, is it?
First of all, he was in charge of amnesty. He was the leader, and you can ask Marco because they've been debating this every debate that we've had. As far as coming back in, number one, you wouldn't even be talking and you wouldn't have asked that as the first question if it weren't for me when my opening, when I talked about illegal immigration, it wouldn't even be a big subject. But we either have a country or we don't have a country. We have at least 11 million people in this country that came in illegally. They will go out. They will come back. Some will come back, the best, through a process. They have to come back legally. They have to come back through a process, and it may not be a very quick process, but I think that's very fair and very fine. They're going to get online with other people. I criticize Mitt Romney for losing the election. He should have won that election. He had a failed president. He ran a terrible campaign. He was a terrible candidate. That's what I criticized Mitt Romney.
Well,
I
mean,
he ran one terrible campaign. That's an election that should have been won.
Well, in fact, I agree we should have won, and I wish we would have. But in fact, you did criticize him for saying, for using the term self-deportation. I mean, that's on the record, and people can look it up right now online. But again, I just want to reiterate, I think it's really important, this point. I think it's fine. It's an important point that you raise, and we discuss on immigration. This is a big issue for Texas, a huge issue for the country. But I also think that if you're going to claim that you're the only one that lifted this into the campaign, that you acknowledge that, for example, you're the only person on the stage that's ever been fined for hiring people to work on your projects illegally. You hired some workers from Poland.
No, I'm the only one on the stage that's hired people. You haven't hired anybody.
Well, in fact, some of the people
and
hired,
by the way,
well, but hold on.
I've hired tens of thousands of people over my job.
You've hired 1,000 people
you've
from another company.
You've had nothing but problems
from another
with your
country.
Credit cards, etc.
Let me finish this statement. This is important.
You haven't hired one
he
person
hired workers from Poland, and he had to pay $1 million or so in a judgment.
That's wrong. That's totally wrong.
Well, people can look it up. I'm sure people are Googling it right now. Look at
Senator Cruz.
Trump, Polish workers. You'll see $1 million for hiring illegal workers on one of his projects.
Yeah,
he did.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
That happened.
I've hired tens of thousands of people over my lifetime. Tens of
Many
thousands.
Many from other countries instead
quiet.
Of hiring
Just
Americans.
Be quiet. Let me talk. I've hired tens of thousands of people. He brings up something from 30 years ago. It worked out very well. Everybody was
yeah, you
happy.
Paid
and
$1 million.
By the way, the laws were totally different. Right. That was a whole different world.
Yeah, we knew Jeb always leaned towards amnesty. I mean, that's just the way Jeb Bush is. And Marco Rubio, he was the toxic Gang of Eight member. I mean, if anything, Rubio is kind of really, this should show you, this is the canary in the coal mine to amnesty or any sort of DACA provision. Rubio on paper would have been the perfect GOP candidate. Not for me. I'm just saying on paper. Just take a look at it on the surface. The bullet point checklist qualifications were met. He's young, good-looking guy, well-spoken. If you listen to him talk about conservative values, I mean, he could convince you that he's a conservative. I mean, he's Cuban Hispanic gentleman. He can enunciate the things that the Tea Party platform exuded. He could fully convey his Christian faith really well. But as far as his policies and his political actions go, he wasn't practicing what he was preaching. That's what made Rubio toxic. He could never shake the Gang of Eight. So you could dismantle him pretty easy. But for Trump to take it further and destroy somebody like Ted Cruz and assume his position as the one fighting the insiders from the outside, that was asinine. I mean, Cruz was voted in the 2010 Tea Party wave. I mean, he was a man alone in fighting the establishment, the progressive left, and the media. And in 2012, when this Gang of Eight bill of amnesty was being created, all he did was place a provision on it, which would nullify their voting ability, effectively reduce their citizenship status, and effectively call in the bluff of those who wanted ulterior motives via amnesty, simply because that was the only way a singular senator could leverage acting completely on his own, just like he did with his infamous filibuster. That's the only way he could make that effective. So for Trump to destroy him simply because he had some legislative handlings and had his hands in the dirt, even if it was to sabotage the bill and to turn around and make it as though Cruz advocated amnesty simply so Donald Trump could win the nomination, was reason enough for me not to like him. But there's a reason why many like myself thought he was a con man. I mean, listen to what he said about the Dreamers back in 2011.
Ask Michelle to actually physically go across the street and tell the family right. of 25 years to get out of this country. She wouldn't do it because she's a good person.
But here's the problem with Mitt Romney in this situation. He came out and say it's a magnet and he disagrees. But in 2007, he was calling for the same exact thing. Newt Gingrich fired back and said, here's your clip from Meet the Press from 2 years, 3 years ago. Does that bother you?
Well, actually, he didn't strongly disagree. And in fact, a lot of people are really curious as to when he'll say something. Because, you know, I just saw something on television where they were saying that he really hasn't taken a stance or a very strong stance yet, and he hasn't said anything about what Newt said. So let's see what he says. But look, this is a matter of this isn't conservative. I'm the world's most conservative person. This isn't conservative. This is compassion.
Is it amnesty?
I guess to a certain extent, for a very limited number of people, it would be considered amnesty. But how do you tell a family that's been here for 25 years to get out?
That's tough.
Or if their kids are born here, they stay, the parents leave, and that's where
right.
Newt Gingrich's contention
right.
is. How can you be the party that is pro-family and dividing the family?
Example, you have people in this country for 20 years. They've done a great job. They've done wonderfully. They've gone to school. They've gotten good marks. They're productive. Now we're supposed to send them out of the country? I don't believe in that, Michelle, and you understand that. I don't believe in a lot of things that are being said.
But you see, I already was familiar with this clip during the primaries, although no one wanted to listen when we shared it. But essentially, he has become a full-fledged politician. This isn't your outsider anymore. He's no different than Hillary Clinton, changing lanes on her dreamer status as she did back in 2014.
Many children are fleeing from that violence.
Should they be able to stay here? It's safer.
It may be safer, but that's not the answer. I do not.
So should they be sent back?
First of all, we have to provide the best emergency care we can provide. We have children 5 and 6 years old who have come up from Central America. We need to do more to provide border security in
so
southern Mexico.
They should be sent back now.
Well, they should be sent back as soon as it can be determined who responsible adults and their families are, because there are concerns about whether all of them can be sent back. But I think All of them who can be should be reunited with their families. And just as Vice President Biden is arguing today in Central America, we've got to do more. I started this when I was secretary to deal with the violence in this region, to deal with border security.
And it's the same kind of flip-flopping that we got from Obama on gay marriage. I mean, here's what Barack Obama thought about gay marriage back in 2008.
Define marriage.
I believe that marriage is the union between a man and a woman. Now, for me as a Christian, for me as a Christian, it's also a sacred union. Mm-hmm. You know, God's in the mix. Uh-huh.
Would you support a constitutional amendment with that that definition?
No, I would not.
Why not?
And because historically we have not defined marriage in our Constitution. It's been a matter of state law. That has been our tradition. Now, I mean, let's break it down. The reason that people think there needs to be a constitutional amendment, some people believe, is because of the concern that about same-sex marriage. I am not somebody who promotes same-sex marriage, but I do believe in civil unions. I do believe that we should not, that for a gay partners to want to visit each other in a hospital, mm-hmm. for the state to say, you know what, that's all right. Mm-hmm. I don't think in any way inhibits my core beliefs about what marriage are. Mm-hmm. I think my faith is strong enough and my marriage is strong enough that I can afford those civil rights to others, even if I have a different perspective or a different view.
Okay, how about this?
And here's Barack Obama coming full circle, well, maybe 180, he's turned around, back in 2015 on when gay marriage actually became allowable.
I have to tell you, as I said, I've been going through an evolution on this issue. I've always been adamant that gay and lesbian Americans should be treated fairly and equally. And that's why, in addition to everything we've done in this administration, rolling back Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so that outstanding Americans can serve our country, whether it's no longer defending the Defense Against Marriage Act, which tried to federalize what has historically been state law, I've stood on the side of broader equality for the LGBT community. And I had hesitated on gay marriage, in part because I thought civil unions would be sufficient, that was something that would give people hospital visitation rights and other elements that we take for granted. I was sensitive to the fact that for a lot of people, you know, the word marriage was something that evokes very powerful traditions, religious beliefs, and so forth. But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are in incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, when I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
Like the great philosopher Eddie Vedder once said, and I think he even wrote it on his arm with a Sharpie at a MTV Music Awards show, it's evolution, baby! And that must be what Trump is doing. Yeah, that's it. He's evolving, 4D chess style, like most of his surrogates believe. You know, that's also known as flip-flopping, right? He's moving back to the position that caused many of us, including myself, to be wary of his candidacy in the first place. He's kicking DACA back to Congress when he should have just let it rescind itself and allow someone else to introduce the bill if they felt the need to decide whether or not they thought they should. The problem is Trump is politically forcing a proposal to be introduced by using social media and the press to push back against those who want to even see the DACA provision just die. See, the problem that we have with Congress is we know that they were itching to make amnesty back in 2012, regardless of what the people thought. So we're going to shove the idea down their throats again? I'm not sure they'll even care that they were even voted into power to secure the border and remove illegals that are hiding in the shadows. They will go through and push it on through because that's what the lobbyists want. That's what the Democrats want. That's what the progressive Republican Party wants. Donald Trump essentially even lumped in hurricane relief with the debt ceiling talks when he could have done that separately. And he's going to push that 3 months so that when Christmas time rolls around, suddenly it becomes a financial issue for those working in government and the press can demonize the death out of that to the point where that's the leverage that will cause the Republicans to cave. They're going to say, oh, well, you know, you're not going to get those checks, you know, for Christmas time. The government's going to shut down and we can't have that. So get ready for that fun. I mean, then we find out he's been negotiating this for months with Jared Kushner and Dick Durbin. And then you have to question his intentions. So the dreamer you heard in the first segment crying, sobbing, giving us the world's tiniest violin shouldn't really be worried because they're not even going to be deported anywhere thanks to Donald Trump's shift in position. And we also found out Trump's not including the border wall funding in the DACA provision. But see, this is how the left operates. What they do is they get the largest number of people dependent and addicted on their programs so that when you want those programs removed, you look like a prick. The outcome of the sob stories, the emotional heartstring pieces, they're all going to come out and they're going to tug on your heartstrings. Stories about how you're going to ruin a person's life, how you're going to damage this person's world, how you're going to destroy this person's ability to live day to day. We're going to see that all over the place. All because you just want some fiscal responsibility. All because you want to roll back overreaching government. You know what? Maybe the president is simply being drugged. Occam's razor. You know, the simplest theory is usually the best answer. And that is what Alex Jones is kind of thinking is going on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was told this by high-level sources, and it was evident, and especially after Reagan was shot, in his first year in office, when he was acting like Trump and doing the right things, that he never really recovered. They gave him cold blood and his transfusion that causes brain damage. They slowly gave him small amounts of sedatives. It's known that most presidents end up getting drugged. Small dosages of sedatives till they build it up. Trump's such a bull. He hasn't fully understood it yet, but I've talked to people, multiple ones, and they believe that they are putting a slow sedative that they're building up that's also addictive in his Diet Cokes and in his iced tea, and that the president by 6 or 7 at night is basically slurring his words and is drugged. Now, first they had to isolate him to do that, but yes, ladies and gentlemen, I've talked to people that talk to the president now at 9 at night. He is slurring his words. And I'm going to leave it at that. I've talked to folks that have talked to him directly. So notice, oh, he's mentally ill. Oh, he's got Alzheimer's. They isolate him. Then you start slowly building up the dose. But instead of titrating it like poison, like venom of a cobra or a rattlesnake or a water moccasin, where you build it up slowly so that you get a immunity to it, you're building it slowly so the person doesn't notice it. First, it's almost zero, just a tiny bit, and then a little more. And then your brain subconsciously becomes addicted to it and wants it. And so as the dose gets bigger and bigger, you get more comfortable in it. The president's about 2 months into being covertly drugged. Now, I'm risking my life, by the way, telling you all this. I was physically sick before I went on air because I'm smart. And I don't mean that in a braggadocious way. I mean, I'm not dumb.
So there it is. Trump is being drugged with democraxia. Turns you back into a Democrat. Side effects include debt ceiling deals, an affinity for DACA, forgetfulness of the border wall. We have to understand that the Trump supporters, they don't even care. They think he's brilliant. They think he's got their best interest at heart. But they also think of themselves as conservative, which is a dead term. They believe they are conservative much in the same way that many in the church believe they're Christian. Yeah, they've attended the services. They've sung the songs and the hymns. They may be involved in joining the committees that help the church operate on the day-to-day. But they've never accepted the true gospel. They've never even cracked open the Gideon and studied the Word of God. They simply look at people that they were hanging out with, saw what they were doing, and said, wow, I'm not like those guys anymore. They've gone off the deep end. I don't even know who they are. So that must mean I am conservative. And this allows pivots to progressivism by people who think they're conservative because they don't understand the roots of limited government at all. They don't immediately recognize natural rights when a politician steps all on it. They haven't revisited the Constitution to understand what government cannot and should not do. If they did, they might be surprised at the ground that they just give away to the government, how much of that happens on a regular basis. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can listen to me on Talk America Radio every Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Saturday evening, it replays at 10 p.m. on the Liberty Channel. You can tune in to the Justice Channel Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then it's going to replay on Talk America Radio Justice Channel at 8 a.m. Sunday morning. Check out the iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn podcasts. They're available for on-demand listening. Check out our website, adriansladeshow.com, and donate at Patron at Adrian Slade Show. Patron at Adrian Slade Show. We'll see you guys next time.